Did Jesus study in Egypt, India, China, and America? The story of Jesus. Lecture 9. Did Jesus study in Egypt, India, China, and America? Well, to study means to go and be aware. To study means to be open and receptive to. To study means to reveal all the knowledge that is within you. And if Jesus had all the knowledge within him, as he had, then he surely studied every nook and cranny on the face of the earth. He was at every port of call. He was at every possible nation or country or what have you, because he was revealing that from himself. Now, we have Gertrude here. And Gertrude is a worldwide traveler. And Gertrude, one day is one place and another day is another place. She's standing on the stage in Switzerland singing, and then the next moment, she's talking to her grandchildren and advising them on how to love unconditionally, which she is an expert at. And then the next moment, she is talking to her daughter in New Zealand and encouraging her daughter to follow the new paths that she has in designing flaxen and doing great things. Because, you see, Gertrude is a skilled person in the crafts and arts. And so she is able to give her daughter this information, which her daughter did not take at an earlier age. But now she eagerly takes it, because the very thing that she rejected is the very thing that is making her life feel very fulfilled and satisfied now. So that's why Gertrude never gives up on her family, on her world. And then the next thing you know, she is traveling mentally with her son and his family down to where? Cameroon in Africa? And then the next thing you know, she is here in campus in San Diego, California. She is just having the time of her life. And she is talking with friends who are from Australia, friends who are from Switzerland, friends who are from San Diego, and all over the world. Now, these people have always existed. These people and places were always there. But she revealed them to herself. She studied them. She looked at them and came to the conclusion that they were very beautiful because they were her creation. And of course, she came to the conclusion that Jesus knew from the very beginning. Always visit your creation. Always go and talk to your creation, honor your creation, and love your creation, and see your creation whole and perfect, doing everything beautiful and everything good. And so Gertrude has traveled the world in doing this, and she has a great time. And then she has another son who gives her all sorts of headaches, because one minute he's in Switzerland, the next minute he's in Thailand, the next minute in Switzerland, the next minute in Thailand. He's just a yo-yo, bouncing back and forth, having the time of his life. And she goes with him. When he's in Thailand, she's there too, mentally, you know. She's there too, revealing whatever is for him. Now, what does she see him doing in Thailand? She sees him being one of the most noble, beautiful, sensitive, loving characters in the world in Thailand, turning the Thailand people on to the Swiss people as being the most wonderful, beautiful people on the face of the earth. And of course, his name is Adrian, so he does that very well. And her children are just international travelers. And she is an international traveler. And yet, years ago, if you would have said to Gertrude, "Gertrude, you're going to be an international traveler," she said, "That sounds like fun, but I've never been an international traveler." But she was. She always had been. She always will be. Because she mentally is more in a place than she ever is physically. Because here she is physically on campus, and her big problem in being physically on campus is that she is wherever her body is. She doesn't think of herself over in the embassy, over in the citadel, over in the hermitage. She doesn't think of herself over in the oasis or over in the Shangri-La or over in the retreats. She doesn't think of herself. She's there. She goes there. And when she thinks of her family, she thinks of herself there. She thinks of herself with her family, even though her family may yet be in Switzerland, may yet be somewhere else. But you see, we travel more broadly, more wonderfully, and more marvelously than we know. And we have a tendency to say, well, Jesus never went to India, to Egypt, to China, and to America. My gosh, what was going on in America at the time that Jesus was running around, huh? 2,000 years ago, what was going on in America? The Indians were running around, you know, having a good time. It was their country. And what was she doing? She was right there with Jesus, enjoying the Indians. What was she doing? She was right there in Egypt 2,000 years ago, enjoying the Pharaoh, enjoying the stories, enjoying the magic of living there. What did she do? She was in China. She was watching the great Chinese emperors as they were living their lives in lavish luxury and magnificence that was never imagined by the Western civilization, with things that they created that were so fantastic, and Jesus was there. Now, do you think they all saw him? Quite likely not, because he was there in toto. You know what that means? He was there completely. He was there in all of China, in all of Japan, in all of Egypt. Whenever he went somewhere, he was in his allness, would you say? And if he was there in his allness, then he was there in all of that place. Well, how can you be in all of Egypt? It's a big place. No, it isn't. Every little thought you have about Egypt when you're in Egypt places you in that area. And this is where Jesus was, and this is what Jesus did. Now, there has been no human being before or since Jesus who has ever done that. There has been no human being who has played on multi-dimensions of experience before Jesus or after Jesus, right? Nobody. And he was the only one, the only begotten son of the infinite creative cause. How silly. This is what we allow ourselves to be taught in the Bible. And this is what we allow people to come along and tell us. Now, we're going to be cleaning up the act of a few of those things just a little later here when we get to our friend John and Paul and Peter. But for the moment, we are in Jesus' childhood yet. We are in his youth. We are in the time that he is omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. Is that true? Yes. Is that true? Jesus is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. Well, and then he said, you can do that too? Uh-huh. Well, why don't you? Why don't we?
We do.
We do. Who said we do? You're right, we do. But the thing is, we are not always cognizant that we do this. We think it's a dream. Now, I will tell you, this is something others have told you too, but I will tell you too. If you will train yourself in this body, in this lifetime, in this experience, to be aware of your dreams. When you wake up, to be aware of your dreams, not immersed in them, but just to be aware of them. When you wake up to be aware of them, and be aware of where you were and what you did and how you did it, you will realize that you are more omniscient and more omnipresent and more omnipotent than you had ever imagined, because you are there. Now you see, this mother, as an illustration, her son is at war, in war, and he's on his battleship out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and the submarines are coming around shooting at the battleship, you know, boom, boom, you know, and the mother feels her son is in danger. Really? And the mother says, I surround you with my pure white light of love. All your ways are peace and all your paths are pleasantness. And you know what happens? The torpedoes of the submarine go under, around, and never touch that ship. Never touch that ship, because one mother had the consciousness to say, I surround my son with my pure white light of love. All his ways are peace and all his paths are pleasant. And believe it. You understand? And believe it. She didn't make anything happen. She just surrounded him, much like Emil's mother surrounded them, and Jesus surrounded them with the white light of love so the bandits couldn't chase them. And that's just a fascinating concept, isn't it? You see, this is not something one person thinks in their strange mind. This is something that is a reality. Now, what are you doing? You are missing some of the most exciting adventures in life, and you go to the theater, and you watch videos, and you remember what the theater and the videos say, but you don't pay any attention to your dreams, which are far more exciting and far more wonderful than anything that a video or a theater could give you. You understand? Now, how do we train ourselves to be aware of this? How do we train ourselves? How did Jesus train himself to be aware of himself wherever he chose to go? You know, how did he do that? It's a very simple thing. But how did he do it? So Jesus just told himself, I'm going there, and I know. Now, take a look at this. Here we have an ignorant, unworldly person, Jesus, and all of his compatriots, okay? All of his brothers and sisters and all the family and all the people he knew in his time were not world travelers. They did not know that there was another place on the earth that was different from them. They would go from one town to another, and as you did in Switzerland years ago, you'd go from one town to another, and you thought that was the whole world. You had no idea. You might read it in textbooks that you had, but Jesus didn't have textbooks, remember? Jesus didn't have anything except the Bible, which was a very interesting experience. And the Bible, what did it talk about? It talked about the flood. It talked about the Garden of Eden. It talked about all these cool places, and they couldn't find it. They didn't know where it was because it was in consciousness. Okay, now, in light of this, he did some very interesting things. I was going to say magical, but I don't want to put it in that level. Some very interesting things. He decided that he was omnipresent and omniscient and omnipotent. He decided that he knew all things. And so he said to his mind, okay, crazy mind, silly, stupid mind, come on, crazy, let's think some crazy thoughts. Let's think of some people who are of a different color. They're in a different color. And so they thought of the Chinese with their yellow skin. Now, I've seen some black people who have come through Jerusalem, Palestine, so forth, because they're from Ethiopia, and I'm familiar with black people, but people with yellow skin? My goodness sakes, that is different. I wonder where they are. And so his mind took him to where they were, and he visited them. And his mind said to him, hey, there's some interesting people too down there. Look at that. And he's flying along through the sky, looking at the world. He says, hey, this place is round. Isn't this neat? It's a round globe. Yeah, isn't that neat? And then he looked down. He said, look, my goodness, that's a big swimming pool there. And it's the Sea of India, you know? Yeah. And he looks at all these places, and he sees him from high up. Because he doesn't need oxygen. He's there mentally, isn't he? And so he's traveling around the world, and he comes back, and he says, my friends, you would be surprised what a wonderful world you live in. You'd be surprised at all the magical, mystical things that there are. Now, when he went to India, when he went to China, when he went to America, when he went to Egypt a little closer, but when he went to these places, was he teaching or was he learning? Was he a student or was he a teacher? Well, I would say he was an observer. He looked and he said, isn't that wonderful? He looked and he said, what have I created here? Because as far as he's concerned, he created that for the first time right then. He created that for the first time, and it was never seen by human eyes before his eyes saw them. And he was delighted. And as he was delighted, what happened? More delights came his way. And he would look down, and he would see the two big armies. And they were all dressed up in their ancient Chinese fighting garb. And they had their horses, and they had their spears, and they had their shields. And they were all, and they even had gunpowder. Boom, boom. And they were going to have a great battle. And he looked down on them and he said, you guys look like you're going to have fun, but you might hurt each other. And in my world, nobody hurts each other. Nobody does. So I surround you with my pure white light of love, and now go play your game. So what did they do? They played their game. And they didn't touch each other. They didn't hit each other. Their spears didn't kill anybody. And when they got tired, they said, time out. Time to go home, go to bed, take a nap. And then they weren't interested in war anymore. They weren't interested in fighting. They weren't interested in being in this challenging situation. They were not interested in that. Do you understand? He did not stop the war. He did not stop the hatred between them. He just poured his love on there, and his love made war ludicrous, made war unnecessary, made war a silly game, you know? They looked at it totally differently. When Ellen and I went to Australia, we saw the Australian market was just plummeting down to the bottom. The dollar was getting to nothing. And the people were blaming the legislators and blaming all the governing people. And we thought, what a silly group of people. You know, how silly. And so we spoke at the different organizations. And as we spoke at them, we said, hey, your government is the most wonderful government in the world. They are the most intelligent, wisely guided government, and they are working with the economics of this country so that the dollar is strong and powerful and up and wonderful. And everywhere we went, we said that. And people thought we were strange. But they thought we were so strange that they listened to us. And they practiced it. And by the time we left, after a week or two, the dollar was strong, the government was up, and the people had a high attitude about a government that they only a few days or weeks before felt was the worst in the world. You understand? Now, Ellen and I, we spoke our word. We spoke our word at these various organizations. And we spoke our word lovingly. We said, bless your government. Bless your economic base here in this country. Bless it. Don't curse it. You want it to be good. Bless it. And we don't know whether they did or not, but we did see the market up and the government up by the time we left. Had we planted good seeds? I believe we did. Were they in fertile soil? I believe they were. Yes, Ellen.
I just want in this connection tell you that Fernando, who just came here, he said that Ghana has just received a new government, and it is very positive, and it's very, very welcome. And he wrote an email to Reverend Samuel Sasso about it. Just in the same direction.
Ellen said that one of our students, that is one of our close friends who sponsors us for seminars in Ghana, that our ozone man, who provides ozone for our swimming pool and our jacuzzis here on campus, that he's heard on the radio or television or wherever he heard it, that the government in Ghana has just changed. And it is a more positive government now, which was pretty positive before, actually. It's a very positive government, which looks like it's going to be a very beneficial thing. Not only in that, but we have been promoting the ozone to Ghana and Nigeria to purify their water and make their water so that it can be drinkable for as little as $200 for a little unit that serves 18 people, 18 families, and 18 households, and that the cost to operate it per year is about 30 cents a year. And so we have been promoting that in those countries to tell them about this wonderful beneficial gadget that works so well. And we haven't heard too much response just yet, but we planted the seeds, and they're waiting now for me to send them the 20-page report that I have for them, but I've got to type up the report and prepare it and get it sent for them. Oh, you'll do it? Thank you. And get it sent to them. But it's right there on my desk waiting to go. And as soon as it goes, it will be sent to them, and we will send it to the important people who are working on that. And it's ready. It's ready. And I prepared the report in the first place, and then I prepared it in the second place, but now I had to prepare it on type so it could be sent to them with a PDF file. And we'll do that. You see, these things happen, but not by chance. And Edith Strabel here has just offered to typeset it. And Edith Strabel is working for the government in Switzerland to as their secretary in chief of the entire Swiss nation, handling all of their business, or something like that. You know, why not blow the horn? But no, she is a responsible position with her organization over there. But I thank you very much. So, but when Jesus traveled, he traveled mentally. And when he wanted to travel mentally, he didn't want to explain what he was doing. See you, Mom, taking a trip. And so he laid down in the desert, took a nap under some beautiful rock, and off he went. Now, he didn't want to take his body along because his body wasn't necessary. He didn't want to take his body along and feed it and clothe it and drink it and that sort of stuff and have people say, "Where are you from? You got a different costume than we have. You got different color skin than we have. You look like a Jew, and I've never seen a Jew, you know? And of course, you know, you look like a Chink, a Chinaman, and I've never seen a Chinaman, you know?" And they've got names for everybody. But you see, when we go out of body, when we go in our, hey, have you ever done an out of body journey? When we go out of body, we are freer to be more responsive and have a great deal more fun than when we go in our body. Because in our body, our body makes demands on us. Our body makes demands on us for food, for sleep, for going to the toilet, you know, and for eating and doing all these things. And that's a silly thing to have to bother with. And so when we can go out of body, when we can go spiritually as an illumined essence, it's a lot more fun and a lot more less discussion, you know what I mean? You don't have to tell people where you're from and what you're doing and why you're there. And here you are in the emperor's bedroom, you know, in China. And the emperor is sitting there working at his desk in his bedroom, and he sees, who the heck are you? You know, and of course you can understand any language in the world. And so you say, well, I'm Jesus from Nazareth of, you know, over there in Palestine, in Israel area. And he says, where's that? You know, and that's on the other side of the country here, you know. And oh, come on now. There is no other side of the country. There's the Himalayan mountains. And you know, that we've got this whole world is ours. You know, we are in charge. There's a little island over there with some people on who think that they're independent, but we own them too, you know, because we do trade with them and we control them. Ha, 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 you know. And of course, the Japanese thought they controlled the Chinese. But that's all part of the game. But if you go there without a body, if you go there in a spiritually illumined consciousness, you can have so much fun. And this is what Jesus did. Jesus traveled the universe. Now, when you all heard the story that if you're drowning, your life whirls before your eyes. You have a motion picture of your whole life in color, zipping before your eyes. Your entire lifespan of 10 years, 50 years, 100 years, however long you're living, zip, like that, and clear. If you chose to, you could be aware of each little point along the way. Now, if our mind, if our thinking system has the capacity to have an experience like that, we certainly can travel around the world and do many things in many places. And now comes another point. And I don't know whether you're ready for this or not, personally, but you're ready to hear it. Jesus was a multifaceted character, as we all are, but he knew it, and he knows it. And he was able to be in umpty-dump places at the same time. 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 places at the same time, consciously aware of what he was doing there, consciously aware of what he was sharing there. Now, they say Quetzalcoatl in Mexico was living about the same time Jesus did and was teaching people many of the same things that Jesus taught, but to a Mexican Aztec type audience, which used a different language and had different purposes. Their agriculture was different, their mode of government was different, but you see, Jesus was instantly aware of all of those things. And so he could be there and be a subtle influence on it. Have you ever had an experience like this? You were thinking, well, I think I'll turn left at this next road. And then a voice inside of you says, go straight ahead. And you think, nope, I want to turn left. The ocean's over there. I'm going to go see the ocean. And the voice inside of you says, go straight ahead. And so, no, I'm going to turn left. You don't listen to the voice inside. Ha, ha, ha. And you turn left. And then you run into a most fascinating detour. Over bumps and around this here. Very rugged. Whereas if you had gone straight ahead, the road went like this and right to where you wanted to go without all that detour nonsense. You see, when we listen, the divine in us, the all-knowingness within us, which is there and always revealing itself to us, whether we want to listen to it or not, it doesn't care. It just keeps revealing. Go straight ahead. Go straight ahead. I'm turning left. Go straight ahead. It doesn't say don't turn left. It just says go straight ahead. The divine in you and I, in us, always just guides us direct. It always just speaks to us in clear, unencumbered attitudes that are very specific and very definite. And we are the ones who don't listen. We are the ones who think, I don't feel like going straight ahead. I'm going to turn. I don't feel like doing this. I'm going to do that. And you're sitting at a beautiful, sumptuous dinner. And the dinner is wonderful. And so you begin to eat. You haven't started eating, you're just beginning. You sit down, and then something inside of you says, push it aside and go on to the next course. And your hostess or host or whatever, aren't you going to have that? That's so delicious. Thank you, no. Oh, but you're missing really something that we have created with all of our heart for you. Thank you very much, you know. And so the captain of the airline, eating the same chicken dinner that everybody else eats, dies of food poisoning. And the airline crashes. No, but the co-pilot had fish. And so he was able to bring the plane in safely. Now, you think that's funny? I mean, you think that's strange? Is it rational? When the voice in you says, let it alone, or when it says, pass it by, do so. Begin to listen to that voice within you. And when you begin to listen to that voice within you, you will begin to be able to remember your dreams, because you'll be living your dreams. And your dreams will be taking you to all of these fabulous adventures that are going on all over the world. And never, never, never feel sorry for yourself. Because if in the tiniest little bit you feel sorry for yourself that you didn't get to eat that first course that looked so good, you may give yourself reason to feel sorry for yourself when you have complete indigestion and whatever. But always follow your inner guidance that says, it doesn't say don't do something, it just says pass it by, go on. You know, pass it by, go on. This is what Jesus lived his life by. This is what made Jesus so spectacular as a sharer, a teacher, as a mentor, as a guru, as an expression of his own divinity, which we have equal capacity for. But you can never experience what Jesus experienced. You can never experience all of this magic that is there for us to have unless you listen to your teacher within. Unless you listen to the divine within, which always guides us in a perfect way, in a perfect pattern, to a perfect conclusion of a perfect experience. And it is wonderful. And if we don't pay attention to it, if we don't listen to it, if we don't follow it, that's okay. Hey, you're going to have a zillion lifetimes, and I don't want to say lifetimes, because then you think reincarnation. You're going to have a zillion, what do we call it?
Dimensions.
You're going to have a zillion dimensions, and they're not lifetimes. And they're not experiences, but you're going to have a zillion dimensions on which you're going to have fun things and do things. Now, wouldn't it be nice if on each dimension you were alert to listening to the divine within? If on each, and you can say that, on each dimension I am alert to listening to the divine within. And you can say that, and you can have that be a fact for you. Now, this is your choice. This is what Jesus did. Do you think Jesus died on the cross? We'll talk about that a little later, but do you think he did? He gave the appearance of death. But what did Jesus say? He said, the last enemy we shall overcome is death. Not the fact of death, but the attitude of death. Because death is not a fact. We live eternally. Death is just an attitude. And this is what he had worked with people and shown people and taught people and demonstrated by his own life and his own experiences what was going on. Now, how do you think the Jewish people learned how to cook sushi? Jesus came back from one of his sorties, and he had just learned how to cook sushi. And so he taught his friends who were chefs in their little restaurants in Israel how to cook sushi. Now, they didn't listen. They didn't listen. They had to do it their way. They had to cook it thoroughly. They had to take the sauces and add their own blend of spices to them until they no longer were the sushi that he had taught them to make from the Japanese and the Chinese, you see? And this is where we make our mistakes. The divine in us is always teaching us the universal allness, always teaching us every single thing that there is to know, but you think you know better. Oh, surely we've got to add a little bit of the soy sauce to this. We've got to add a little bit of this, what is that, that brown vinegar stuff you have? We got to add that. And here, Ingeborg, she is such a pain in the neck. Ingeborg goes to the table, and she has so many things she dumps on her food that how she could ever tell what the original food tasted like, I have no idea. But I let her do it. I say, the hell with it. If that's where she wants to go, great. If she wants to miss the precious flavor of the freshness and the purity of these things, go ahead. It doesn't matter. She's not eating it to feed her body. She's eating it just to be a little belligerent and obstreperous. And we all do that. We all do that. Lydia comes here from her background, her experience. She says, now, I've got to have this sauce on there. I've got to have that. Lydia, use the sauces that we got here in China. You'll be surprised at what kind of an interesting taste it is, you know. Or don't eat it at all. You don't have to, you know. But if you're going to, when in Rome, what do?
As the Romans do.
You do as the Romans do. And you have the time of your life, right, Ingeborg?
Yes.
Right. And this is the thing to do. This is the thing to do. We don't want to just make everything a gobbledygook when we have the divine within us showing us these different things. Now, not that sushi is good. Not that any of the native dishes of any country is good or better than what we've been experiencing somewhere else. But if you say you want to have the native dish at all, well, have it native. Now, I love to go to the countries of the world, and I love to have in every country of the world an American hamburger. And I am absolutely satisfied with, and I love American pizza wherever I go. I'm not going to that country to eat their food, okay? I have not developed my body's taste for their food. Nothing wrong with their food, but I have not developed my body's taste for it. I have not developed my immunity to the things that they are immune to, and they're immune to an awful lot of things because they have their food cooked in ways that I might call unsanitary, and yet for them it is perfectly normal, you know, perfectly beneficial for them. However, what did Jesus do when he traveled? Anybody speak up and tell me.
He went there mentally. He went there mentally.
And?
He didn't eat.
He did not eat their food.
Right.
Thank you. Okay. He went there mentally, and he did not eat their food. Now, not that it would have bothered him in the slightest. The Buddha, he, for 85, 86 years, he ate all the trash that his mendicant monks brought to him from all the households, which were very poor households, you know, and they gave what they could, and they cooked in their very unsanitary way, and did all the things that they did in their very unsanitary way, and he lived just fine, 85, 86 years, you know. And then he said, I think I'll move on to my next dimension. And so he ate some tainted food, and he got ptomaine poisoning, and it killed him. Now, that's a beautiful way to go, because people can accept that. Now, if he had done as he was thinking of doing, he was thinking, adios, amigos, you know, and just sort of disappear right in their midst, or out of their midst. He could go to the bathroom and then never come back from the bathroom, you know. What do you do, flush himself down there? And then, but the thing is, he disappeared. and people would say, oh dear, did he really live? Was he a figment of our imagination? And that's why Jesus had to do the appearance of death on the cross, because otherwise his story would not appear valid. The Buddha had to die of ptomaine poisoning, or else his story would not have appeared valid. And the other stories of the other people. Now, what happened to Quetzalcoatl? Remember?
Yeah, he left over the ocean.
He walked across the ocean as all of his people looked, don't go, Daddy, don't go! No, and he had enough of it. He says, I'm leaving so the Comforter can come. Just like Jesus said, you know. And this is beautiful. Now, can you travel as Jesus travels? Yes. Do you travel like Jesus travels? Yes. Now, do you judge? That's the big point. Do you judge what you see when you go someplace? Or do you just observe? Now you see, to judge means you have preconceived conceptions on what is right and what is wrong. And when you are unconditionally loving, there is no right and there is no wrong. There just is and is. To be unconditionally loving is a very, very difficult thing. It's a very tedious thing to do. It is almost unbelievably difficult to do because everyone has an opinion on something, you know? Now, you say, Herb, bring me a glass of water. And so you go to the flower pot water there and you pour it into the glass and give it to me. And I say, couldn't you go to the sink and get me a fresh glass of water? Oh, this is beautiful. And I say, well, now, really, is it? And then, and I die of poisoning because it had the plant poison in it, the plant food and all that other good stuff, you know. And no, by choice. If I don't judge, if I say, hey, give me a glass of water, you give me a glass of water, I drink it, thank you, and nothing. But the moment I think I know what it is and I think it's not good, I judge it and I make it good or evil, you see? And it's a stupid thing to do. Today, I was talking to Rex. He had just been out playing in the yard and he came in. And Rex is a magic boy. Rex has two ears, big ears with big canals in there, big old thing. One ear is always spotless, absolutely spotless. And the other ear looks like he's raising a garden in there. And so I take the Q-tip and this little oil that I put on there, and I go in his ear and I clean out his garden. And he says, oh, it's okay, Dad, you take your time, you know. And I'm digging away there and spading out the dirt from his garden. And pretty soon I get it all out, and it looks just wonderful. And I know, but I shouldn't know, I know that 10 minutes later, the garden will be back. And it won't hurt him in the slightest, but it'll be back. Now, what I can do, if it pleases me, I can... If I can create one ear clean, I can create two ears clean. You know that? So now, why don't I create him with two ears that are perfectly clean? Herb, why are you talking about your dog's ears, you know? Because this is being master of yourself. Do I create him with two ears clean?
If you want to.
If I want to. He was out standing in the yard, greeting me as we came, and the rain was coming down. And so I came in, and I touched him, and he was all wet. And I took his doggy cloth, and I rubbed it gently on his back. Instantly, he was dry. Instantly. Now, how do you do that? We should learn that trick, you know. That's very good, very good. With all that heavy coat of fur on him, too. Now, you see, he is designed as a dog never to need a bath. He is designed to have perfect coat of hair if he gets a normal diet, have a perfect coat of hair all his life, and never need a bath. Oh, you brush him if you wish, but you don't have to, because he shakes and all the hair falls definitely right into place. And if he isn't feeling well and he messes on himself a little bit, he can clean that up, because that's not an anathema to him. That's not bad to him. He doesn't consider that bad. We consider it bad, but he doesn't. And like a mother cleans up her little baby after it's being born, and she cleans up the mess, and she cleans up the things with her tongue, and eats these things down, and there's nothing to it. There's nothing to it. There's nothing imperfect about your baby. That's your baby. Everything your baby does is perfect, even when it messes around, you know, messes up. Don't ever forget that. There's nothing imperfect about my puppy Rex, 85, 6 pounds. There's nothing imperfect about him. There's nothing imperfect about my son. I mean, I'm sorry that the rest of you didn't have the same program I had, but I got the best. I have the number one son in the universe, absolutely number one. And, of course, who are you?
Number one.
Oh, if you're number one, then your son should be number one, your daughter should be number one, your world should be number one, your husband should be number one, your cat should be number one, you know. Everything in your life should be number one.
Right.
And is it true?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what is that thing you have in your house, Gertrude? You call it the moon. Luna. Ah, mein Gott, ja. Yeah, Luna means moon, you know that. Yes, you know, Irene told you that, didn't she? Yeah, okay. Now, she has this little Jack Russell Terrier called Luna in her house. And who is the boss of the house? Luna. And Luna only lately moved in. But Luna was wrapped with love, wrapped with, not infidelity, but she cannot make a mistake. What's the term? When the Pope is
infallible.
Yeah, Luna is infallible. She cannot make a mistake. And even when she does some silly things, she cannot make... I had bars of candy there that I had in Ellen's suitcase, and Ellen left the suitcase unzipped, and the dog went in and ate several of them and stashed away the others where she could get to them later, you know? And she wasn't sick. She wasn't bothered at all. Big candy bars that are almost as big as her stomach is, you know? And I tell you, you see, we are so worried about our life and what we eat and what we do. And when things are done in love, when unconditional love is the guide for everything that we do, then everything is in divine order. Then everything is perfect. Now, when are you going to start remembering your dreams?
Now.
Right now. And what are you going to find out in your dreams? Now, Leonardo da Vinci, he designed a diving bell. You know what a diving bell is, to go under the water. Well, he didn't have any way to pump air into that diving bell. He didn't have any way to have a motor pumping air down into it, or by hand, as they later did. He didn't have any idea what he was going to do with the diving bell, but he designed it. And then he also designed a helicopter. Now, in that century, helicopters were certainly not even dreamed of. People looked at that, and what's that thing, you know? It looks like a child's toy, because a child's toy is the precursor of all great inventions. A child's toy does crazy things and has crazy angles to it and stuff like that, and then along comes some inventor and says, that's a good idea, I think I'll make something like that, you know. And there, lo and behold, you have a helicopter. But you see, that Michelangelo, that Leonardo da Vinci, could create those and many other objects, invent them on paper. Their time had not yet come to be expressed, or had it. What if Leonardo da Vinci, I don't know what I'm doing with Mike all the time, what if Leonardo da Vinci were to have moved further in that realm instead of playing around with painting the Last Supper and these other things? What if he had really played around with his inventive cycle of his personality? Do you think he could have eventually even created the gasoline engine and created the ability to find gas and or propane from the cows, you know, just put a bag on the back of a cow, and then you'd have the propane gas to run your engine. You know, could he have done those things? Well, sure he could. Sure he could. You know? Did you ever walk through a marshy area and see fire in the area where the marsh gas was creating this propane-type gas and methane-type gas, and somehow it caught on fire? And phew, it goes. And you see, that's magic. That's magic. But it's just the mind putting together this magic of the methane, this magic of a vehicle with a carburetor to make an engine go round, and this magic of making the engine produce air to shove it down into a diving bell. You know, or could the Pharaoh have had a beautiful Cadillac car to drive in? Sure. If he had chosen to dream in that area, if he had chosen to wildly dream. Now, can we travel the universe without a car, without a plane, without anything, and do it right now? Do it right now in this lifetime, in this experience, in this dimension. Can we do it? And can we be aware that we're doing it? And can we not be so proud that we're doing it? We got to tell everybody. We just go and do it and enjoy it. You know? Go and do it and enjoy it. Now you say, well, Herb, if this is what you're saying, and Jesus really didn't tell people of all of his journeys, but he told them of the experiences that he had. You know, he told them of the being harmonious and that sort of good stuff. How do you know about all that stuff? How do you know that he had those experiences? How do you know that? He told me. Now, do you want him to tell you? Or do you want to go do it yourself? Or both? Or you want to have him come along as your guide? He's a fun guide. You know, he's much more fun than you realize. He doesn't like to play games, but he likes to go swimming. And he likes to dive and come up like a porpoise and dive out of the water and dive back in. He just loves to walk across the desert. He loves to lie down at night and look up at the stars that he has created and think to himself, wow, that's neat, you know. Isn't it nice to look at your creation and say that's neat? Gertrude, did you ever look at your son, Martin, and say, oh, he is neat. He's your baby. He is neat. And always say that. Yeah, all of you, with whoever is in your life, can you say that? And when you say that, then you are a very good creator. Now, who's saying that? The divine in you, the Christ in you, the purity in you, the goodness in you, the God in you. That's what's saying it. Now, are you ready to really enjoy an adventure like that? You're here hearing the story of Jesus, and you're thinking to yourself, boy, oh boy, oh boy, I have never heard it like this. And you won't. Because there's no one close enough to the Christ, to Jesus, to tell the story. Because everyone who gets close enough gets so excited they forget to listen. And they just start to worship. And when you start to worship and not listen, you miss out on all the fun and all the games. We have audio videos here on Saturday night, and we show these videos, and they are usually positive type videos and happy type videos. And then after the video, I usually quiz everybody who's there, and I say, well, now, what did it say to you? Why did they do certain things? Oh, I didn't notice they did that. Why did they do things? Why did they act in that way? What was the result of the movie? What came from this man doing this, or this boy doing that, or this girl doing this, or this woman doing that? What came from that? And they start thinking about what came from that. And they begin to say, Ah, yes. Yes, I did see that. I did understand that. But I didn't put much impression on it. And the first thing that my family here want to do, if the movie has any ugliness in it, or any anger and anxiety, they want to walk out, which is fine. You never have to be in anything that you are not comfortable with. But what would Jesus do if he were in a situation where there was unhappiness? So forth?
Being untouched.
If Jesus were in a situation that was had unhappiness in it, unhappiness is not his nature, he would not see it. He would not see it. If Jesus were in a situation where there was anger and there was evil, he would not hear it. He would only hear who he is. So when you are anywhere and you hear anything contrary to what you think your nature is, and I say think, because if your nature is that, you don't hear it. If your nature is not that, then you hear it. Anytime you hear anyone using foul language, it's because that's your nature. Anytime you hear anyone being disrespectful to another human being, that's your nature. Anytime you see a person hurting another person or causing them anxiety or pain, that's your nature. Because wherever you are, you say, I am the pure white light of love, and I surround myself with my pure white light of love. That's all I am, that's all I know, that's all I do. Now, can you do that?
Yes.
Well, do it. And have fun. And know that I love you very much, and this is only the beginning of our wonderful adventure together on many levels of consciousness. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you. I love you.